Accession number 16630, Marguerite Patton, Reel 1.
Marguerite Patton, Reel 1. So if I could ask you first of all then, you know, about your background, where of lifestyle you have.
Well, I was born in a beautiful city, Bath, and to this day I still love it, and I was fortunate in later life, although we left there when I was between 4 and 5, my grandparents lived there, so I could go back. And in my professional life, I've lectured in training colleges to home economies. I always used to love going back to Bath and always made sure I went back a little early so I had time to recapture the memories of being there. And then we moved to Barnet in Hertfordshire. And when I was young in Barnet, it was a fairly sort of country town, very rural. And I grew up there. And I went to a school that was really very well known in Barnet, Queen Elizabeth Girls Grammar School. It was one of the fee-paying schools where people moved, I believe, because the education was so good, in order to have their children there. My life was a mixture. I had of happiness and unhappiness because my father died, largely as a result of the First World War. He'd been gassed twice, I believe, temporarily blinded, recovered. He was a master printer, but he couldn't be a printer immediately after the First World War because his eyesight was so bad, and bought a dairy, which I don't remember, but my mother used to fill us with stories of the mule who took the dairy cart around. Father hated it, of course. And then he came to Barnet and had a printing works of his own. He was, I believe, a very, very good printer. I think I've inherited his love of layout, because when I do books today, cookery books, you may say, well, nothing to do with you, dear. You provide the recipes. But I love making the page fit. That's Father, I think. He was a brilliant musician. And my memories of him were watching him on stages when he was playing the piano for charity or things like that. So he died and left my mother, as he'd been self-employed, and self-employed people didn't have the same sort of pensions they have today, and Father hadn't had time to invest any money, so we were left with no money, and Mother had 3 children. And now she belonged to the generation, of course, that never worked after they were married. But she was a very, very brave lady. And within 3 weeks, she'd got herself back to school as a school teacher. She was really an English teacher. And it was at a period when there was a lot of unemployment. And she had to start as a primary school teacher. And I always remember her famous story. We've lived on this for years. The very first week, the headmistress sent for her and said, Mrs. Brown, will you come, please? The child's had an accident. So Mother went in, and the child's glass eye had come out. So the headmistress said, well, if you put it back. Mother said, I don't think I can. And the headmistress was incensed. She said, well, you've got 3 children. So Mother said, yes, but none of them have got glass eyes. Do you know, to this day, I never remember if she put it back or the headmistress put it back. So that really set the background of growing up. I was the eldest of the 3. My brother was nearly 3 years younger, and my sister 8 years younger. So I was the big sister. And that, of course, really set a seal on my future career. I come from a family of teachers. I believe my grandmother was a very early headmistress. She married very late, so I don't know how old quite she was when she was late, but she was a very old lady when I remembered her, but very much a headmistress, you know. We loved her, but we knew we had to be very respectful and answer questions promptly and show our academic skill. Well, I had no intention of being a teacher. It's the thing I said I would never be. I was going to be an actress. There was no doubt about it, a Shakespearean actress preferably. But I had longer school holidays than my mother. Well, she was teaching an entirely different school. By now she'd gone into the senior school, which was much more her forte. And I began to cook a bit when she'd gone back to school and I was left at home. And that's when I discovered that I liked cooking. I think I was bossy, and therefore I felt I was in charge and able to do things. And apparently my father's mother, who died when I was a baby, was a very brilliant cook. And her ability comes through various places. Some of my nieces, they have all different professions from mine. One's a doctor, one's an art expert, but they all love cooking. This runs through our family quite a bit. So when the time came that whether I should stay and take higher school certificate, as it was called in those days, mother wanted me to, I didn't want to. I think I had two ambitions, one to make some money to help mother, and secondly, to try and get on the stage. And then somebody had the bright idea, right, if this girl doesn't want to teach, she's got this ability to cook, why doesn't she go and learn more about cooking? And then become what is now called a home economist. Everybody knows that term today, but at that stage, I think we were domestic science trained demonstrators rather than teachers. So that's what I did. I did relatively short, but very good courses in Barnet for a short time. And then I got a job in the electricity supply company. In those days, they were privately owned. And of course, that was luck. I've been one of the people who've had luck in so many ways. I always sum up my career as being the right person in the right place at the right time. And the North Met, as it was known, became the Eastern Electricity Board. But it had a great tradition of training young people. So that from the moment I arrived, I was sent off on training courses, public speaking courses, nutrition courses, laundry courses, every course you can imagine. It was a little bit, I imagine, like the army. We want volunteers, you, and you. So that's really how I began to cook. It was a very interesting career. And it was a particular job that furthered one's skill in cooking. Of course, at the back of it, you were showing people the wonderful advantages of electric cooking. Not many other big electrical appliances, because really, it's difficult to imagine today, but in 1937, or 36 when I started, let me do a bit of arithmetic, yes, round about that time, or even, a year or so earlier, really, refrigerators were almost unknown in the average home. Washing machines were creeping in with electric wringers. And one had to tell people to mind their fingers because there are all sorts of horrid stories of people mangling, setting the power and their fingers with the clothes going in. So those were the two basic things we demonstrated. And we always entertained people before demonstrations. So you had a very good grounding in cooking tea for about 50 or 60 hungry visitors. And we used to go out into homes and show people how to use their cooker. I remember General Booth of Salvation Army fame had a house in Hadley Wood, which was a lovely part, and very adjoining Barnet, and going there to show the cook how to use the new cooker. And those sort of things happened. So you then had to cook meals for them. So that was my background for several years. And in between, because of my great desire to act, I had applied for a scholarship for the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. I didn't get the scholarship, but I was judged sufficiently good to be allowed to enter. That was a problem, because there weren't grants in those days, so I just had to say no. Which, of course, was upsetting. My mother, I think, was upset because she would have loved me to do what I wanted to do. My mother was great on that, let children find the kind of things they want and encourage them as much as you possibly can. However, a very good man who taught at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama heard about it and gave me private lessons. And I did weekend shows at the Everyman Theatre, Hampstead, which was an interesting mixture of keen amateurs, as I was, and I suppose fairly good amateurs, and professionals resting at the term, of course, that's always been used when you're out of work on the stage. And I met a girl and got very friendly with her. And one day, a telegram arrived, a letter following, have suggested you for a job at Oldham Theatre. And then the letter came. Apparently this particular girl, who was a professional actress but had been resting at the time, had, by a miracle, landed two jobs together. She took the better and suggested me for the other. So that was a terrible decision to make. I was beginning to earn quite a lot of money and becoming a senior home economist and doing very nicely, thank you. And there was my brother, who'd gone as a cadet in the Merchant Navy, a very expensive thing that we had to support him in, and all the times he's studying. I mean, he was young enough not really to be earning much money then, and there was my little sister. But my mother said, take it. If you don't take this all your life, you'll be wondering and regretting and wishing. So I went to see my chief at the electricity supply company, and he was a delightful man. And he said, well, you haven't had your holiday this year. They say you're going for 3 weeks on trial. Why don't you go for 3 weeks on trial and take it as your holiday? So I really wasn't risking anything. If they like you, well, that's our bad luck. If they don't like you, well, you come back. So with that, I went to Oldham. And I had, 7 or 8 months in repertory there. And believe it or no, we used to have 2 performances nightly. It was weekly rep. So on Monday, you'd have the dress rehearsal for the play, and you'd give your 2 performances. Tuesday morning, you would start rehearsing next week's play and still give 2 performances of the current play in the evening. Wonderful grounding for young people, I think, because it teaches you never to be afraid of work. You work so hard, but of course, I loved it, loved every minute of it. The season went on until just before Christmas. And it was closing, or the company were closing, because pantomime was coming in. And none of us were pantomime artists. And the company weren't opening up until the next year in Leicester. And so I came home, and I was a resting actress. Well, I began to get bothered, and I didn't know what to do. And so I went to see my senior at the electricity company and said, here, I really must try and get some work for about 3 or 4 months. And she said, well, you won't get a job as a home economist, I don't think, just for a short time. But why don't you apply for a selling job? And refrigerators were beginning to take off then. And they were quite news. And one of the biggest firms, one you don't hear about very much today, was known as Frigidaire. And Frigidaire was a little like Hoover. It was a generic term. If people had a refrigerator, they nearly always called it a Frigidaire. In the same way as they have a vacuum cleaner, they tend to call it a Hoover, whether it's a Hoover or not. And so I applied to Frigidaire, which was at Edgware, not too far from Barnet, for a job as a saleswoman. I was asked to go for an interview. And when I got there, a tremendous number of females, all looking very grand, and most of them older than I was there. And I thought, oh, extraordinary, they must be having a selling push. Now, here's luck, maybe I shall have a few months' well-paid work. And it wasn't until the interview started that I realised that my application had coincided with an advertisement in the Times and Telegraph for a well-qualified home economist for them. And, of course, there's something contrary, I think, in most of us, that if a thing's difficult, we want it. And, of course, I changed horses straight away, and I immediately applied to be a home economist. The day went on with a lot of interviews, and then it came down to a shortlist. They did all in one day. And there were only 2 or 3 left, which I was one, which surprised me enormously, because I really was not, as I'm sure, as well qualified as many of the other ladies. However, they had American directors from General Motors, because it belonged to the great firm General Motors. And one of them had the bright idea, let them give a demonstration. There was no refrigerator, no table, no equipment. But if you see, that's how repertory works. On the first day or so, you lie on beds that don't exist and you put hats on that you haven't got in your hand. So really, I was back on Tuesday morning in repertory. So away I went. And to cut a long story short, I got the job. And I realised I was probably the highest paid home economist, quite by accident, in the electrical industry. And so I reported to them, and I nearly said thank you very much, goodbye, the first morning, because they told me my very first job was to give a 3-hour lecture to all the female senior members of the electrical industry on refrigeration. I went back to my friend who'd urged me to apply for the job and said, hi, you got me in this mess, you get me out of it. And she had all sorts of ideas. And there was a very excellent organisation then. It doesn't exist now. It was called the Electrical Association for Women. And it was in London. And they coordinated training. They coordinated all sorts of things that applied to women who were working in the electrical industry. And their job was, of course, to help us on. So here I was back in the electrical industry, and I rushed up there. And again, my luck held, because the senior person there was a delightful lady. She had a long, slow drawl. And I shall hear her days, all my life. She said, my dear, you don't know much about refrigeration. They don't know much about refrigeration. All you have to do is to be one beat ahead of them. And with that, we looked over American magazines, because America, of course, was so much further forward than Britain in having refrigeration. Looked up all the things they said, any technical things they said with which I might dazzle my audience. And so that was the first job I did. And then I began to travel all around Britain in great luxury, I should say, because they stressed, Frigidaire, that I represented them, that I must book into the best hotels, only travel first class. I was really an enchanted world almost. So when April came, I had no hesitation in saying, right, I won't go back. This is my life from now on. I did acting in my spare time, and I've never been back on the professional stage. And so I stayed with Frigidaire 38, not very long, 38, 39. And then, of course, the war was looming ahead, and General Motors certainly weren't worrying about refrigerators in Britain. They were going to make other things, I don't know exactly what. And so the job ended then. That was sad, and I had a lovely holiday. Mother, my younger sister and I went to France for the first time. We'd none of us been abroad. And so we went to a little place near Boulogne called Vimereux, and had a lovely time. And then we watched there, and really this was most moving, because our hotel overlooked the little square and the church. And you saw crowds, this was in about 3 weeks before war came, when we first went there. And you watched soldiers and their French soldiers and their families all going into the church. And my sister and I began to get very frightened. We should go home. My mother said, not me. This is my first holiday abroad. The British Navy will get us back. I don't know if that was the right thing to say, but that was the way we stayed. We stayed to the bitter end. And my word, the British Navy were getting people back, or the Merchant Navy was getting people back, because the ships were absolutely packed. You know, people were coming in from all over Europe to get back to England. Before we had a holiday, I'd applied and got a job with the Yorkshire Electric Power Company. So immediately I had to pack and go up to Bradford. And that is where I heard about war being declared. It was a particularly beautiful day. You know how you have lovely days in September. Just a little nip in the air. And I'd only been in this house, 2 days. And in those days, one didn't have flatlets so much, or flats, young people. You boarded with people. And this was one of the big old houses in Bradford. And I had a room there and shared a bathroom and a kitchen. Now, that's quite unusual to cook for yourself at all. The ladies of the house provided breakfast. Perhaps they thought we couldn't get ourselves up if they didn't provide breakfast. But you were responsible for the rest of your meals. So it was a combined thing, being looked after and looking after yourself. And I was feeling very homesick on that Sunday morning. And a very elegant lady came out of a room, just a bit older than I was, and said, "Oh, isn't it a horrid thought?" And I said, "Isn't it dreadful?" She said, "Would you like to come and listen with me to my radio?" And I said, "Yes, I would," because I really didn't want to be by myself that day. I suspect a lot of people felt like that. You knew something awful was going to happen. So we went together in her room. She was a manager of Jaeger, the fashion people. I heard that while we were waiting for Mr. Chamberlain's speech. And it was quite uncanny the way it came over. And you just felt, oh, what is going to happen? In my mind, I was thinking, well, of course, I should give my notice in tomorrow and go straight back home. I'm not going to be apart from the family. If we're all going to be bombed, we'll be bombed together. And then again, I always remember, we stayed there and we had lunch together, how one by one all the various countries of the Commonwealth came in. I think that to me was one of the most moving periods of my life, because to begin with you thought, gosh, we're alone, you know, this terrible Germany is going to come and blitz us to death or bomb us to bits. And then gradually you felt it was almost like being a stranger and kind people holding out a hand. And all these voices came over the air and you realised that you weren't alone, that you had the strength of people right across the world and across the Atlantic supporting us. I did go in the next day and say, well, I'm awfully sorry. I know this is a terrible thing to do as you've engaged me, but I really cannot stay here worrying about my mother, because Barnet immediately, from being a nice sort of a little town away from London, became in my mind part of London. And London, of course, would be hit badly. So the manager persuaded me to think about it. And I rang my mother, who was the wisest person I ever knew, and she said, look, aren't you being a little bit over hasty? Why not wait? I did wait, and I spent up to nearly Christmas time in Bradford. As a cook, I was asked to take over cooking in the ARP canteen on, I think it was two nights a week. I know one was Saturday. And I learned then that going into catering, of which I'd had no experience, even if you're a volunteer, as we all were, it is really not all honey, because the police used to come in, the wardens used to come in, eggs and chips for two, miss, and hurry up, you know, there was no would you be so kind as to make us eggs and chips, nothing like that at all. And I only did a short time in the middle of the week because I had a working day next day. But I remember I used to go on about 9 o'clock, I think, and the policeman used to run me home about 5 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and I was absolutely worn out then. But again, you were part of doing something, no question about it. And then I was told that I was wanted at Lincoln. That I would take over a very big showroom there. That was an interesting thing. Again, a private supply company. I learnt when I was at Frigidaire that it was a mixture electricity in those days of various local authorities running electricity, private companies running electricity, and you saw the good, the bad, and the indifferent. You see, I'd begun in a very, very good electricity supply company, and we were groomed and drilled, and high standards were expected, but that wasn't the case everywhere. But the North Lincolnshire and Howdenshire It was called the Yorkshire and North Lincolnshire and Howden Electricity Company, covered a whole enormous area of Yorkshire, an enormous area of Lincolnshire. And so I was going to take over a big show in Lincoln itself, but it didn't supply electricity to Lincoln, the city, it was the outlying parts of Lincolnshire. So very regretfully, because I'd made friends in Bradford, and I didn't particularly want to be moved, but I suppose it was at a period, I think, when we all said yes, you know, if we were asked to do something or told to do something, we did it. And so down to Lincoln I went. And I was in Lincoln from 40, 41. And I was incredibly busy there because the men were being called up. And I started to give a lot of cookery demonstrations in association with the local authority, the education people. And we used to give them in everywhere where you could find it, because, of course, rationing began officially at the beginning of 1940. In the autumn of 39 in Bradford, really, we weren't affected by rationing. I knew it was coming, but as I hadn't a family, I'd only myself to look after. It really didn't touch me very much indeed. And when I went home for Christmas before really starting work in Lincoln, again, Christmas 1939 was a normal Christmas as far as food was concerned. But we knew rationing was imminent. And it started in 1940. And so I was allowed a demonstration ration, not very much of anything, and I used to go out to these little village halls, and I used to cook on the most antiquated equipment. I remember one, and probably more than one, which was an oil stove, which hadn't been used, I should think, since World War I. And when it was lit, the caretaker lit it and said, "You might find a few fumes." Few fumes. I surveyed my audience and they surveyed me through a real pea soup of fog. And I can remember I sort of gave the demonstration wiping the tears from my eyes, not in grief, but just because they were smarting so much. So that took up evenings a lot of that time. I did fire watching. I did a certain amount of ARP work. But I was very busy in the day because the men were being called up. And I was asked, would I take over a dual management as a home economist, looking after the showrooms and everything else, but also the electricians, because the manager of Lincoln was being made a manager of several branches. And therefore the electricians would come to me for their instructions. Well, I think, as everybody who knows me well would say, I am a very unmechanical female. The electricity people sent me on a course, you know, to know how to mend cookers and things like that. But it was a good job I was never asked to do it, because I just don't think the cooker would have worked again. In theory, I knew what to do, but somehow my hands never seemed to do the right thing quite. But there I was in charge of the electricians, and I had a foreman electrician. And I always feel that I would have loved to have met that gentleman in the years after the war, because he really ought to be in the diplomatic corps. He used to ask me for instructions in a way that he knew I would always give the right answer, and that I would never lose face, you know, and show how horribly ignorant I was. He was a gem, an absolute gem. And then, of course, I was told, in spite of all that, that I was not in a reserved occupation, and therefore would have to go into the services. And at the same time, I was told that the Ministry of People, like me, now that happened almost simultaneously, and at the same time almost, I met my husband. He wasn't my husband then, of course. He was at Waddington, one of the airfields near us, and they were Hampden bombers at that time. My husband had come back from the Western Desert. He'd been flying out there, Wellingtons. But I must go on with the story of how I came to the Ministry of Food. The Ministry of Food said, "By Jove, we want you, because we're recruiting all these home economists, many of whom are school teachers. Now, they have dealt with children, And what we want are people like you who have dealt with adults, because it's very important that we don't talk down to adults, that we give them help, but it's not in a sort of schoolmistressy way. So we would like you to come to us. And I said, well, I've been told I've got to report and have a medical for the WAF. So they said, oh dear, oh dear. Well, if you can't, if they don't accept you in the WAF, then please come to us. And I did go for an interview for the WAF, and I discovered something very strange. I'd volunteered for special duties, which meant I had to work underground and recognise various aircraft which were flashed up in the dark. And when I did a test, they discovered I got something, perfect eyesight, but night blindness, so that I couldn't recognise things in the dark quickly. And they said, oh, you'd be no good to us. Catering's closed. So what would you like to do? So I said, well, I think join the Ministry of Food. So that's how I went to the Ministry of Food.